Hello and welcome to the seventh episode of the Allegro podcast. For today's episode, I will be talking to Jonathan Galt. If you're a big fan of running, you may have read one of Jonathan's articles or tweets. Jonathan is a staff writer at Let'sRun.com, one of the hosts of the popular Let'sRun.com's Track Talk podcast, and in general, a well-known journalist in the sport of track and field. He was also a track and cross-country runner at Dartmouth College. In this episode, we will talk about Jonathan's journey with running and also dive into the world of track and field journalism. With that being said, I hope you all enjoy the episode. Also, just for some context, this episode was recorded about a week and a half before the start of the U.S. Olympic trials. Allegro. Allegro. Thanks for joining me today, Jonathan. I want to start by asking a question I ask every guest. How did you get into the sport of running?
Oh man, it's going back a ways, I guess, because I'm 30 years old now, and you know, I've been running, I guess, half my life at this point, because I really started seriously as a freshman in high school. But I guess you could go even further back, you know, when you're running laps as a kid. I was kind of chunky, but I could always tell, like, I had pretty decent endurance just for a, you know, someone my size. And so I got to high school, I started playing soccer, and I figured, you know, soccer was a full sport. What could I do in the winter and spring to stay in shape? And running was an option. I went out for the indoor track team. I thought distance running would be my best bet. And, you know, I made a lot of progress fairly quickly, got down to 10:28 in the 2 mile by the end of my freshman year, which is, you know, pretty solid for a freshman. And at that point, I was pretty much hooked, and I've been a runner ever since.
Awesome, yeah. So throughout all of your time running so far, what do you consider your greatest running accomplishment?
Ooh, great. That's a good question. Probably my 10,000-meter personal best. That was my best event in college, and I ran 29:43 as a senior in 2013 at the Mount Sac Relays. Sorry about that in the background. Yeah, I'd say that was just, I mean, because that was 4 years of college, and I guess, you know, 4 years of high school, just all my training. I was pretty healthy throughout high school and college, and it just piled on top of each other. And that was the fittest I ever was. I think it's my most impressive PB. So I'd like to say it was like winning a conference title in college, or winning, I didn't even win a race in college, so I can't really say anything like that, but I'm pretty proud of that personal best.
So you were like a 10,000 guy in college, like, because I know, like, obviously people focus mid-distance, some people 1500, so you really focused on like 5k and 10k throughout college?
Definitely. I really, you know, when I got to college, some of my teammates actually made fun of me for just how little foot speed I had. Like, I really struggled to break 60 seconds on the 4x4 in high school, and I didn't break 2 minutes in the 800 until my junior year in college. So I was pretty much destined for the 5K and 10K, but I enjoyed it. You know, you can still run cross country when you're a 5K, 10K specialist. So I didn't mind it that much.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I feel like I get better as the distances go up, and I just feel like I have more fun, like the more miles I'm running. So transitioning to like same topic, I guess. So Let's Run and other media, track media outlets have definitely played a role in fostering the love of running for many high school runners. I think it's safe to say that. Like, I remember Kyle Merber in a podcast, he was saying that he became a big fan of the sport in high school. He was like very active on like several message boards. So when you competed in high school, were you a fan of the sport of running as well? I know you said you competed, but do you also follow the sport?
Yes, I did. And actually, one of those message boards I'm sure Kyle mentioned was DieStat, because he posted on DieStat, and I was pretty active on there, maybe not posting as much as Kyle, and, you know, I wasn't as fast as he was, but I knew he posted it on there. I was aware of like all the other top high schoolers who posted on there, and I followed the high school level of sport very closely, but also, you know, the professional sport. I'd watched the world championships. I've watched the Olympic trials, that sort of thing. Certainly, I didn't follow it to the degree that I do now, but I definitely enjoyed those big championship races and watching those on TV when I was in high school.
Yeah, I'm a junior right now, so I'm definitely like super into the sport of running. Like, I really got into the sport, I'd say, my freshman year, like starting with the cross country season. But yeah, I've watched so many like YouTube videos, and then like for like these track meets, I'm always on the live results page, like the timing pages, and always just like refreshing to see the times people run. I'm not very active on like message boards or anything, but I'm always looking at like the different like articles written, videos, podcasts, and things like that, and always trying to watch track meets whenever I can.
Well, that's great. Like, do you have are you the exception for kids on your team? Like, how active are they in following the professional level of the sport?
Yeah, so I would say in my freshman year, I was probably like one out of like maybe two people who really followed the sport. And I've really tried to get more people involved with following the sport. Like, I've referenced my podcast to some of my teammates. So it's really cool to see some of them getting involved. And they're starting to like follow like all the Instagram pages that like all the running accounts. But yeah, in general, I'd say I'm just trying to share and spread the love of running with as many teammates as possible, because like, for example, if someone's running like a fast time on a Saturday meet, it's something cool to talk about as a team on an easy run or something like that.
Well, that's great that you're getting your teammates excited about it, because that's what we need to do. I feel like, you know, if you're a football player in high school, you're going to watch the NFL. You know, if you're a basketball player in high school, you're watching the NBA. And in track and field or cross country, I feel like it's not really a given that you're going to follow the professional side of the sport. But if you can sort of get into it, or you have a couple friends who are interested and you guys can talk about it, then that can develop into a lifelong love of the sport. And so I'm glad to hear that you're already excited about it, and hopefully your teammates will be as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, it's so interesting to see, like, I think track has like over like a million participants at the high school level. So like, definitely one of the most popular sports at the youth level. And I know like a lot of media outlets and content creators are working on growing the sport and creating a larger, more involved, more passionate fan base. I just find that whole topic interesting, because like, even though there are over a million participants at the high school level, I wouldn't say the fan base is currently as large as the amount of participants at the high school level. Okay, switching to another topic, you ran cross country and track at Dartmouth College. What led you to running at Dartmouth, and how was the whole experience of being a student athlete at Dartmouth like?
Yeah, it was a ton of fun running at Dartmouth, four of the best years of my life on the cross country team, because I went to a high school where we had maybe two or three kids who were serious about running, but mostly my high school teammates just didn't really, you know, they weren't that serious. And so when I got to college, I was on a team where everyone was really intense about it and took it seriously and, you know, cared about our results. That was really great, really great experience. And, you know, just a lot of fun when you're all pushing towards a shared common goal. And you'll get this at any college team. I'm sure I could have gone to a bunch of different schools and been happy, but it's a great experience and bonds with you with those guys. Like, I'm still, some of my best friends to this day are still guys I ran, you know, long runs with in college and, you know, raced all across the country with. So yeah, but to say, you know, to get back to how I got to Dartmouth, basically, you know, I kept improving in high school, got good enough where I was getting some interest from schools, not, you know, people weren't banging down my door with scholarships, but it was good enough to at least get on the team. And so really it came down to two schools for me, Columbia and Dartmouth. I knew I wanted to go to a strong academic school, but I also wanted to go somewhere that had a good distance program. And those were two of the schools. They fit the bill both on both accounts, and they both sort of recruited me harder than any other schools. So I took visits to both. I know they're pretty different experiences, you know, New York City and then Hanover, New Hampshire, but I really liked both of them and just ended up going to Dartmouth because I figured, you know, at some point I'll probably live in the city as an adult, whereas, you know, I might not get to spend 4 years out in a place like Hanover. And, you know, I'm sure I would have been happy at Columbia, but Dartmouth was terrific. They have a lot of great trails. It's a beautiful campus. It's a terrific school. So really happy with how I ended up there and, you know, with my whole experience running in college.
Awesome. Yeah. So like, as I said, I'm a junior, so college applications coming up. So I'm looking a lot at like different colleges and like watching a lot of like tours for these schools. And like one thing that stands out about Dartmouth is super like unique location, like surrounded by trees, very like green area. So like how was that like, just like having those like infinite access to trails? And I know that's like perfect for a distance runner to have like those good places to run. So how was that aspect of it like?
Oh, we were spoiled for sure. You know, you could run, if you run maybe a mile and a half west across the Connecticut River into Vermont, you know, we had a few different trail systems we could hit there. Or if you stay on the New Hampshire side, you've got a bunch of different trail options there as well. I would say anyone who goes through Hanover, if you're a runner, you need to run through Pine Park. That's just one of the most beautiful places I've ever run. It's gorgeous. It's one of my favorite places to run. And then we've got some other runs, you know, some of the ones in Vermont, there's one called Sound of Music. And we call it that because you just climb for a long time. But then when you get to the top, it looks like the fields from the movie Sound of Music. It's just totally beautiful. So yeah, we got really spoiled. The fall and spring, late spring, it was great for training. In the winter, not quite as much because the trails are snowed over. So you have to go on the roads. And pretty much every road run we have has at least one monster hill in it. So I was never a big hill guy. I'm 6'2". And, you know, at this point, I'm like 170. I was probably like 160 in college. And that's not like a great combination for climbing hills. So winter runs could be tough, but the rest of the year is just, you know, beautiful training. We were definitely spoiled with the trails we had there.
Wow, yeah, that's really cool. Like, I have a few trails by me. Like, I definitely say, like, there's, a lot of access to trails here. There are no, like, dirt roads here, like, that you see in, like, Boulder or anything like that. That seems super cool. But, yeah, there are, like, a lot of cross-country courses nearby where I'm at in New Jersey, which is really nice for training.
Mm. Yeah, the nice thing about Dartmouth is that you really didn't have to drive anywhere to get to trails. Like, I know a lot of other schools, especially some in the city, you know, you might need to get on a bus or something to do some workouts or just to do a regular run. And we would do that maybe once or twice a month if we wanted to do a tempo, because there was a great rail trail that was about a 15-minute drive away. But other than that, every run we had was just accessible from our locker room, which was a really nice perk.
Yeah. For like cross country heps and everything, did you travel to like New York at like Van Cortlandt, or was it at a different location?
It was at Van Cortlandt my freshman and sophomore years, and then VCP started undergoing construction starting with my junior year. So my junior and senior year heps were at Princeton.
Yeah, I feel like the Northeast in general just has so many places to run. Like, there's so many like well-known cross-country courses. Like in New Jersey, we have Homedale Park. There's VCP in New York. And like in general, whenever I visited like college campuses for like field trips and stuff like that, I know like Princeton has a really cool trail along the river. Like you said, Dartmouth has all of those trails. I know Penn has like a trail along the river as well. So many places to run like in the Northeast, which is really nice. And there are just so many schools offering different experiences for running with the different terrains and everything like that.
Yeah, like I said, you know, there's a lot of great schools for running. Like, I'm sure wherever you end up, you know, you can enjoy it. And I'm not trying to say like, oh, Dartmouth's the only place to go if you want great trails. I just will say, you know, my experience, they're pretty darn good.
Yeah. All right. So talking a little bit about media and like shifting away from running, when did you start to develop an interest for sports media, journalism, and like writing in general?
Well, I've always been interested in sports ever since I was little. My dad was always crazy about sports, so that's always been part of my life. But I'd say sports media, I kind of got interested in middle school into broadcasting. And then I sort of realized, I don't know if you noticed, I have a bit of an accent. I was born in England, and I moved over here when I was 10. So I still had, my accent was a bit stronger then than it is now. And I kind of figured maybe that wasn't the best path to pursue. You know, Americans don't really, I didn't think they'd want some Brit calling, you know, basketball or football games for them on, you know, ABC or something like that. So I decided, I'm like, well, what else could I do? Oh, I could write about sports. And that's something, you know, I became interested in that. I always read, I'd read Sports Illustrated cover to cover every week. And, you know, I'd read a lot about sports. And so that became something I was more and more interested in towards the end of high school. And then definitely in college, I was like, all right, this is kind of the path I'd like to go down. So I joined the student newspaper. I ended up becoming sports editor in my junior year. And all the time I was still, you know, reading as much as I could, trying to read great writers and great reporters as much as I could. And, you know, I did a couple internships, but by the time, you know, by the time I got to college, I was pretty sure, yeah, sports writing is what I want to do for a job. And I wasn't, you know, married to, it has to be about running. It could have been about pretty much any sport, just worked out with running was the one that I ended up getting a job for.
Wow, that's cool. So, like, if it wasn't running, like, you're obviously covering running right now. What other sport would you say is, like, the second place? Like, what other sport would you be covering?
Oh, I mean, it would have been cool to cover the NFL just because I'm a big football fan. But at the same time, I mean, or the Premier League as well. That's another thing. Like, I'm a big soccer fan. Those are kind of my two favorite sports outside of running. So either of those would have been really cool, but those are obviously like really tough hot jobs to get. Like, you got to work your way up to an NFL beat or something like that. So who knows if I would have ever made it there. But it's, you know, it's also kind of fun not, you know, just covering running, because those sports, I still get to be a fan. Like, I'm a big fan of the New England Patriots. I'm a big fan of Brighton and Hove Albion. And if I was covering the NFL, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you don't really get to be a fan and cover the league at the same time. So it's kind of nice, the NFL, I can just watch the games and enjoy and root for them as a fan, rather than, you know, if I was a reporter, I wouldn't really get to have that part of my life anymore.
Yeah. For me, I feel like even though I've competed in several sports and I like moderately follow the NBA, I can't imagine, like, from the podcasting perspective, I can't imagine having a podcast covering any other sport besides running personally. But yeah, going back to your experience with journalism, in college, did you pursue any like journalism projects relating to running or like sports in general? Like, how did you continue with this passion in college?
Mostly through my role at the newspaper. So Dartmouth didn't have like a journalism major, so I couldn't really do anything related to sports in my classes, but I wrote for the newspaper, starting with my freshman fall. I wrote all 4 years. So I covered the football team, I covered the baseball team, the basketball team, all that sort of stuff, just writing game reports, doing interviews, trying to, you know, hone my reporting skills. Ended up being sports editor as a junior, and then I had a column as a senior. So I did that. And then I did a couple internships, one with the Lowell Sun, which is a newspaper near my hometown. That was after my sophomore year, and then after my junior year, I worked for Nesson.com, which is, you know, the local cable sports network around here in Boston. So that's kind of how I tried. I followed these projects, and they're outside of class. But that's, I think, I definitely improved. Definitely, still had a lot of work to a lot of way to go after that. But they sort of helped me at least, you know, get some basic skills in the industry.
Yeah, so speaking of the industry, I know for like the tech and startup world, having like all of these projects and building stuff is extremely important. Does the same apply for journalism? And how important was your writing experience when you were getting started in this industry?
It's huge. You need to have something to show someone. When I applied for my internship at the Lowell Sun, I had to show them clips from my newspaper articles at Dartmouth just to prove, hey, yeah, I can write, you know, this is what my writing looks like. They need to see that they're hired, if they're going to hire someone. And I was an unpaid intern, so I was kind of fortunate in that. Well, fortunate and unfortunate, I would say. But I, you know, they wouldn't have hired me if my writing stunk. And the same thing, like, I had some clips from the Lowell Sun that summer where I was reporting on, you know, maybe a little bit more interesting stuff than the Dartmouth basketball team, and that helped me get the internship at Nesson. And then my clips from the Lowell Sun and Nesson helped me get into grad school, and then I had some clips from grad school as well at Syracuse, and all that stuff, I'm sure, helped me get the job at Let's Run. So you need to have something to show employers to show that you're at least competent, and maybe, you know, they hire you with the understanding that you're going to improve, but you need it. It's essential to get your foot in the door.
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. So can you talk a little bit about how you actually started working at Let's Run and what stood out to you about Let's Run over other media outlets?
Well, what stood out is it's one of the few outlets in the world that its only area of coverage is professional running. You know, there aren't many sites like that on the internet. So I would go there as a fan of the sport in college. I would go to Let's Run a lot to follow what was going on. And so coming out of college, I just didn't know if it was feasible for me to get a job there. I needed an internship as part of my graduation requirements for my master's at Syracuse. And so I applied to several places, and Let's Run was one of the few where I actually heard back from. And it took me a little convincing. You know, I had to call out my future boss a few times and just nudge him gently to remind him that I was still sort of applying for this thing. But eventually I got it. It's actually kind of an interesting story. My teammate, Will Gohegan, this was my grad year at Syracuse, so 2013, 2014. And my teammate at Dartmouth, Will, he was a senior, Will Gohegan, and he broke the Ivy League record in the mile, and he ended up doing an interview with Let's Run. And in the interview, Robert Johnson, who's one of the co-founders of the site, had mentioned, oh, you know, would you be interested in a Let's Run internship? And I knew Will wasn't really kind of into that sort of thing, but I was. So I was like, wait, Let's Run, they actually have an internship? Like, I could apply for this? So I reached out after reading that interview and didn't really hear back for a while, but eventually I did hear from Robert and kept pestering him, showed him some of my samples of writing to show that I was, you know, I was at least competent. He took me on as an intern in the summer of 2014. And it was this with the, you know, expectation that I'd stay on for the summer and nothing really beyond that. But by the end of the summer, he liked my work so much that he ended up hiring me on full time, and I've been with them ever since.
Yeah, it's amazing to see that serendipity and see how that whole story played out. I think I've seen a few tweets from your teammate, Will. I think he created like a machine learning model to predict the bracket, right? Or I could be wrong. But yeah, in general, that story is super cool to hear.
Yeah, that was him. He was messaging some of us, or I saw him on Twitter. I don't know if he messaged me directly about it, but I did see he like designed some machine learning tool and finished, I think he was in the 99th percentile of all brackets, or at least he was in the 99th percentile until the national championship game. I don't know whether he picked Gonzaga or Baylor, but he had a really, really good bracket. And so, yeah, that's the same Will Gohegan. He's always been a smart guy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's cool. So what's your favorite aspect of working at Let's Run? Because I know that you guys are doing like so many things in the sport. So what's your favorite aspect?
You know, I have a few. Well, I mean, the travel is really awesome until this pandemic hit. You just get to go to cool places, you know, and cover really interesting meets. Like 2019, I went to Denmark for the World Cross Country Championships. I got to go to Qatar for the World Track and Field Championships. You know, 2017, I was in London for Worlds, Rio for the Olympics. Like, that's really cool. But I don't know if it's the best part of my job. But, I mean, what I really appreciate is Let's Run occupies a place in the running media landscape where what we write matters. A lot of, you know, top coaches and runners and people in the sport will read our site. And if I write something dumb or if I write something that's wrong, I'm going to hear about it from some of them. So I just like that we have sort of, I would say, respect from a lot of the running community. And, you know, you will have our share of critics as well, but I think that most people in the running world at least know what Let's Run is, and a lot of them, whether they admit it or not, will go to the site. And so knowing that what we write sort of can help set the discourse, and also, you know, we've got a responsibility. If we're writing a recap of the meet, we got to frame it correctly. You know, if we got to make sure that we're actually reporting what's going on, what the significance is, because for a lot of fans, and I don't want to be tooting our horn too much, but for a lot of fans, like when they read the Let's Run recap, that's kind of what they're going to think about how that race unfolded. That's where people go to see what others thought about the race. And so I kind of like that space that we occupy in the running media.
Many interviews that like are on YouTube, a lot of athletes say that they were checking out like the previews and predictions prior to their races, and some even say that it provided fuel for them to run fast. Yeah, and I can definitely see how like all these media outlets and their predictions and Let's Run have a prominent place in the running world.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not the only ones doing good work. I mean, there are other outlets that cover the sport and that sort of thing. But I would say, for the most part, I'm proud of the work that we do, and it's just nice to know that your voice is being heard and that, you know, to just have some respect within the industry. I think that's important to me.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Like, a lot of times you hear Let's Run being mentioned in, like, all of these podcasts, interviews, and, like, even newsletters. So there definitely is that, like, impact across the sport, I think. And, like, a lot of times, even after meets, for, like, the average fan, people do check out Let's Run to see, like, the recaps and stuff like that. So I definitely understand that. Okay, yeah, so just shifting the topic a little bit. As a journalist, you're doing, like, various, there are various ways of, like, interacting with athletes and, like, covering the sport. So I know you mentioned traveling to these meets and talking face-to-face with these athletes. And then recently, throughout the pandemic, there have been, like, increase in podcasts and talking, having these long-form conversations digitally with athletes. So what would you say you prefer? Obviously, like, their in-person aspect is good for, like, meeting athletes, but I would say it's cool to have those long-form conversations. So what do you prefer, like, interacting through, like, the mix zones or podcast?
Oh, I don't know if I prefer one or the other. It's sort of, you know, you get different aspects from each format. So like mix zones, I think it's important to go to these meets, and this is something I've, you know, come to appreciate not being able to do it during the pandemic, is you just get your face in front of them. They kind of recognize you. You can build a rapport. You can build trust. If people see that you're at these meets, if you're asking the right questions, if you're not coming across as rude, that's an essential way to build trust. And you can do that over a podcast as well. But sometimes, you know, the only way you get someone on the podcast is if you build up that in-person relationship. So I think being in the mix zone is essential. Just, you know, you can develop trust and develop sources that way. And then you'll bump into other journalists, you'll bump into agents or something. And, you know, it might, that doesn't always happen in the mix zone. That might happen in a bar or something, or in the stands. But going to meets in person and, you know, talking to people and keeping your ear to the ground, I think that's big. And it's been a bummer that we haven't been able to do that. But on the other hand, podcast interviews, you can really get in depth with someone. You know, I'm not going to get a 30-minute or a 45-minute conversation with someone in a mix zone. It's just not feasible. It's not fair to the athlete who has to go cool down. And it's in the middle of a meet, so I'm going to be missing events. So that's where the podcast format is, where you can really dig deep on something. You can ask about a variety of different topics. And ideally, you know, if you've been talking to someone on a podcast half an hour in, they've grown pretty comfortable with you and might be willing to open up if you're doing your job correctly. So I don't know if I prefer one versus the other. I think they both have their own strengths and weaknesses.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That definitely makes sense. So speaking about mix zones, do the trials have those, like the in-person ones, or are they going to be like a Zoom call?
No, it's a Zoom call. And I'm actually pretty disappointed about this, because they're going to have thousands of fans at the trials. And I think, look, I'm sensitive to the pandemic. I understand that not everyone has been vaccinated at this point. I'm not trying to say, like, I'm not trying to endanger athletes here, but I would also think almost all of the media has been vaccinated at this point. And it would be nice to have these in-person mix zones again. And that's not what USATF's doing. They're having it virtual. And, you know, even I'm allowed in the stadium, but to talk to any athletes, I have to be on these Zoom calls. And it's kind of annoying because you don't know if you're going to be able to get everyone. Like, I might want to talk to the fourth placer in some race. Many times the fourth placer might be more interesting than the person who won or the person who finished second, because they're going to be right. The emotions of finishing fourth and missing out on the trials are extremely strong and powerful. And say someone like Matthew Centrowitz finishes fourth place at the trials, right? You're going to want to talk to him. And who knows if it's some virtual mix zone, if they're even going to bring him through. They might say, oh, we're only taking the top three, or, oh, we're only taking the champion. And then you're out of luck. So it's disappointing that we have just a virtual format, especially as, you know, society is opening up more and more. And I'm hoping that this is the last event that utilizes this format, and then we'll be back to normal soon. But yeah, I don't know. It's not going to be the same. And I think there are some good stories that are going to be lost this summer just because of that format.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't even think about that, like the whole fourth place. Because, yeah, there's like with track, there's so many like narratives that have been going on. So it's kind of disappointing to hear that. Yeah, you may only be able to hear from like one athlete in like the race, just because you can only be in like one Zoom call at a time. It's kind of like, I wonder though, because like all the other meets that I've seen, like a lot of people, like a lot of these like YouTube channels, and they're all in the infield and they're interviewing athletes after the race. But then again, the trials is such a big event. It's televised, and the main reason, the safety of everyone, is extremely important. But yeah, I just wonder what exactly went into the decision of implementing in this meet and not the other big meets that we've seen in the recent past.
Yeah, I was at a meet 2 weeks ago in Boston, and I had a mask on, and even though I've been fully vaccinated, it was outdoors, but I had a mask on, and no athlete was worried about talking to me. They weren't concerned. They were fine with it. I talked to a bunch of athletes in person. It was great. I got to, I learned a few things I wouldn't have learned otherwise, and it was very helpful. And it's a little frustrating. We won't have that at the trials. Now, part of that is, in a mixed zone at the trials, those are very crowded. You know, you'll have a lot more reporters gathering around. It'll be in a tent, so it'll be close quarters. So I do get that, you know, if you're worried about the spread of the virus, well, yes, it's going to spread. It's be more likely to spread in a situation like that. At the same time, though, you know, if you said, hey, we're going to require all reporters, if you want an in-person credential, you have to have been vaccinated. I don't think that's too much to ask, considering where the rollout has been in this country. You know, pretty much everyone, if you wanted to get vaccinated by now and you're going to be covering the Olympic trials, you've had that opportunity. So I don't know. Like I said, it's frustrating, but that's the situation we've got to deal with.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've never been in like a mixed zone like in person, so I don't really know how crowded it is or anything. So like the decision in that aspect does make sense. Yeah, so again, talking about like media, so like earlier today, the Ethiopian Olympic trials took place, or like in these past few days, many records were broken and like fast times were run. So right before the call, I noticed that you posted like or you retweeted like a recap of the meet. So how do you go about covering these races and writing like entire recaps so quickly after the event actually took place?
Yeah, so this one I worked with my boss, Robert, and we knew the meet was going on today. And so we talked, you know, we talk on the phone pretty much every day, but we'll have a conference call on Monday mornings where we'll go over, okay, these are the events that are going to happen this week. So this week we know we had the Ethiopian trials today. We've got the Florence Diamond League on Thursday. And then we've also got the NCAA championships, which start tomorrow night. So those are the meets that we're going to be watching and writing about. And, you know, this morning we were sort of chatting and I was like, all right, Robert, what do you want to do? How do you want to cover this? And essentially we decided we'd cover it. We'd, you know, each recap some events as it's going on. So usually what we'll do is I'll have a dual monitor set up and one of my computers will be just a live stream of the meet. And then another one will be a Google Doc, which me and my editors have access to, and we'll just sort of be typing notes about the races, and then we might be working on a recap while the races are going on. So ideally, shortly after the meet finishes, we can finish recapping the events that we weren't you know, that we didn't finish while the meet was going on, and then add in any analysis we might have and then publish it. So that's kind of how we got this thing turned around. It works more easily when there's more of us working on it. You know, sometimes if it's a big diamond league, we might have all three, me, Robert, and Weldon, my two bosses, all working on it. Sometimes if it's just me, it's going to take more, it's a longer time because you've only got one guy writing instead of three. But yeah, today it was me and Robert, and you know, we were able to get something out fairly soon after the meet was over, I think.
Yeah, it seems like a super efficient system, because also, like, I noticed you're always tweeting like the results when they happen, and it's like, it's really good, like, quick news feed. Like I remember the Portland Track Festival, to see what was going on, I was refreshing like your Twitter page to see. So adding that to it, it's like definitely a lot of aspects, but it's cool that you have a system in place that's so efficient.
Yeah. Well, I think Robert, sometimes he gets a little ticked that I should be linking to the Let's Run message board more, like during the meet in my tweets, because we obviously want people following the meet through there as well. But I'd like to think that if someone is seeing my tweets on Twitter, they also know, this guy, he works for Let's Run. Like, if he's giving us good information on Twitter, he's probably also giving us good information on Let's Run. And I'd like to think it would be more likely to drive traffic to the site. So I don't know. Robert and I don't always, he's not always sure if that's the best way, because obviously we want people coming to the website to read our coverage. But I think during the meet, when we don't have like a full article up yet, it's sometimes good to tweet about that stuff. And then when the recap's done, you know, I'll tweet that out and say, hey, here's the full recap of the meet.
Yeah, I will add, like, as a fan of the sport, whenever you're like tweeting about this, like, I would definitely say it's like establishing a lot of credibility for Let's Run. And like, I'm always like, that always drives me to check out like the full length recap on Let's Run. So I personally think it's helpful.
Well, that's great. I got to tell Robert that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I guess now, talking about track in general and like these like really exciting months that we have coming up, super exciting time for track fans and athletes, with like the trials just like a bit more than a week away, and then the Olympic Games this summer. I've never experienced like an Olympic trials or anything like that. So I don't know if you have, but if you have, can you talk a little bit about the experience of that? Because from what I've heard, it sounds amazing.
The U.S. Olympic trials is the best track and field meet on U.S. soil. And I know a lot of people who argue it's even better than the Olympics. And I've been to both. I think they're both great in their own ways. But in terms of just an atmosphere of track fans and feeling that, you know, everyone there is there for the same thing, you get that at the Olympic trials more than the Olympics, for sure. The Olympics is a big international thing. You get fans from all over the world, but it's not the same as the U.S. Olympic trials, where just, you know, anyone who's a fan of the trials, they're going to be out there. They're going to be watching. You go into the bars, you'll see the athletes, you'll see the fans, they'll be decked out in, like, you know, running stuff. It's just an amazing atmosphere. It's a celebration of the sport in America. And it's the one time every 4 years where all of the track fans in this country can just come together and feel like they're among their own people. So just the outside of the, and that doesn't even, you know, that's not even talking about once you get to the actual races, which are always phenomenal. They always deliver because there's so much built-in drama. But just the outside, you know, the social aspect of it is huge for American track fans to realize, hey, we're not alone. Like, there are others like me who are really into this and who build their family vacations around the Olympic trials. And then the meet itself, just like I said, top quality. America's got the best track and field team in the world, so pretty much every event is going to be interesting to watch. 2016 was my first experience in person. I absolutely loved it, and I can't wait to get back there next week for the 2021 edition.
Oh my, yeah, wow. I can only imagine how cool that is, especially like with Hayward Field. That, like, the videos of that are amazing. Like, my only experience with going to those like in-person track meets, like, I'm in the Northeast, so we have Milrose Games and the Fifth Avenue Mile. Those are two big events. And just from that, obviously much smaller scale than the than the Olympic trials, but like the super elite athletes are competing in those events, and like a lot of members of the running community are there, and those events are so amazing. So I can only imagine how like hype the Olympic trials are. So yeah, that's super exciting. I'll be watching virtually to follow the action, and obviously there are definitely probably going to be so many podcasts about it and videos, so I'll be updated on that front.
Yeah, no, if you like Milrose, like Milrose is great. I love going to Milrose, but the trials are like two or three levels up from that because it's just bigger and there's more people there and the races are even better. So yeah, it's a terrific celebration of the sport in the United States.
Oh yeah, definitely. So So speaking a bit about like the actual like races in the trials, what races are you looking forward to? Obviously, we don't want to talk too much about this because that's what like the Let's Run podcast is for. But just like briefly, what events are you looking forward to watching the most?
I'm fascinated by the men's 100 because I think at this point we have a clear favorite in Trayvon Bromell. But beyond that, who knows who's going to make the team in that event? We just saw Marvin Bracey run 9.85 over the weekend, which is the number two time in the world this year. No one expected that to come from Marvin Bracey. Like Noah Lyles, everyone, the big talk was this was going to be the year he was going to try the 100 to 200 double. And with Coleman out of the way, you thought, hey, it's possible. And he sort of struggled to find his form in the 100. So I think that, and then you got Justin Gatlin hanging around trying to go for an Olympic title 17 years after he won his first gold medal. So that event is really exciting to me. The men's 1500, I think, is going to be great with, Centro, Craig Engels, and then the college stars, Yared Nuguse and Cole Hawker. And then you've got the high schooler, Hobbs Kessler, as well. And suddenly, oh, he has the Olympic standard and he might make the team. I mean, that is going to be a race to watch for sure. I think the women's 10K is pretty fascinating to me. You've got two heats. You've also got a lot of talent, though, who's going to make the team in that event? I think the men's 5K is really good. That's super deep. The men's steeple, Evan Jager hasn't run a steeple since 2018. I mean, there are a lot of events that I could look at and say, oh man, this is going to be great. And then women's 800 as well. I don't know. I probably gave you like six of them there, but
if I was asked that question, I wouldn't even be able to say like one event. I feel like every event, there's so many like storylines leading up to it, and it's so competitive this year. Like everyone is just, I like for the 1500, I like just can't think of like three people who are like above everyone else. I feel like there's just so many people competing for those three spots. I'm super excited to follow that whole thing. So like, I feel like the most highly anticipated event for me personally, like there's just so much talk I'm hearing about this. And like, obviously all these race results is the men's 1500, like, so many pros are fast, obviously. Collegiate athletes, and now we have high school athletes running fast times. It's really going to be so hype.
Yeah, and the 15 is like any meet. The 15 is usually one of the best events anyway. I just think the 15 and the 8 are the perfect amount of time in terms of there's enough time to build a storyline, but there's also it's not too long that you're just zoning out like you might do in the early laps of the 10K. But especially this year with so much uncertainty, I think those events are going to be fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. So just to like wrap up this podcast, I know like this has obviously been a topic for like many years now, but recently there's been like a huge movement of like how we can push the sport of running forward. Like so many people are starting podcasts, they're making YouTube channels, like newsletters, just for that like collective goal of growing the sport of running. So what are your thoughts on this whole movement that's going on, and like what are your hopes of like what Let's Run can do to contribute to it?
Yeah, I think it's good for the sport. I mean, the more people who are starting outlets or podcasts or that sort of thing, that's bringing more eyeballs to the sport. It's bringing more listeners. It's more people who are investing in it. So it's very different from when I first started out in 2014, because there weren't very many podcasts that cover running, and now there's a bunch, and I can't keep track of every, you know, running podcast. I listen to a bunch of them just to stay up on the sport, but I'm going to miss some episodes inevitably. But I think that's also good, you know, that forces the people who are in the podcast space to make sure that their product's interesting and that it creates value for their listeners. So, no, I think it's good. I just want to make sure it puts pressure on us to continue delivering quality content and make sure that people are listening to our podcast and they're coming to our site. But I also think, you know, I think what Let's Run's always been interested in is trying to tell the stories of the elite side of the sport, to treat it as an elite sport. You will see other outlets sometimes who treat running as an activity, or, you know, they don't fully break down the sport like you might in a post-game column in a football. Like, after a football game's over or after the Super Bowl's over, people are going to say, oh, what were the tactics that the Chiefs use against the Bucks? Why was the Chiefs offensive line breaking down? You know, they'll go through and dissect it. And I think we try to do that in running as well. We try to treat it like an actual pro sport, like they would with, you know, ESPN would treat basketball or football, that sort of thing. So I think just trying to continue to do that and then finding new ways to engage viewers with our content, you know. And I think that's, we started a podcast, basically we started taking it seriously in 2019, and we've had some success with that. So I think keep doing that. And then we've been experimenting with some video shows, if that's something we want to do. So I just think keep trying to push and find out other ways for our readers and our viewers to engage with us and see what's popular and keep that. And if something's not working, we'll move on with it. But yeah, I think you got to keep up with the times and see what people are doing, and don't just get content like, oh, well, we covered a meet this way, you know, for the last 5 years, so we have to keep doing that. Yeah, we want to keep trying new things and, you know, making sure that we're delivering the best content in the best ways for our audience.
Yeah, definitely. I know for like this podcast, we've definitely had like a younger range of guests, like people just out of high school. So I'm just curious, like, how different was like the running media like landscape back when you were running in high school and like college compared to how it is now?
It was smaller for sure. You know, there just wasn't as much coverage of the sport. I'd still, when I was in high school, I'd go to DieStat, and that was really my only source of information for high school running. That's what I cared about the most. If I did follow the pros, I didn't really start going to Let's Run that much until I was in, you know, maybe my senior year of high school and then into college. But, you know, they would, Let's Run, I think, would try to link to pretty much every running article that was written at that point. And at this point, that's an impossible task. Like, there's just too much, you know, it's not like running's over-covered, but it is covered widely enough that, you know, we can't link to every single running article every day. So I do think just in terms of the number of outlets that are covering the sport, they've grown, you know, it's not like, again, we're not swamped by too much media coverage, but it's more. And I think the other thing, the biggest change I would say is just social media. Like when I was in high school, Twitter was in its infancy. You know, Instagram, I don't think even existed yet. And so if you were going to hear from an athlete, it was going to be through an interview where they did with a news outlet or something like that, right? And now athletes can tweet out their races, their thoughts after races. They can show you what their training's been like. You know, you would know if Bowman Track Club's at an altitude camp, you know about it if you're on Instagram, right? And in the past, you know, when I started out, you wouldn't necessarily know that. That's something I'd have to call up, you know, an agent or an athlete and try to figure out. So that, to me, the rise of social media is definitely the biggest change in terms of when I was in high school to now. But in general, the sport is just, you know, it's covered a little bit more broadly.
Yeah. I've really heard like this idea of like, yeah, definitely like increase in social media. Like, a lot of people are saying like back in like 10 years ago, for example, like people just didn't know everyone's training. Like now I feel like maybe not so much at the pro level, but at least in like college and high school, like you can find people's training. Some people post like Instagram stories about it. Some people are posting on Strava about it. So it just more a well-connected community, I would say, just from my like younger perspective.
Yeah. Strava was not like, running logs were a thing when I was in high school and college, and you know, I definitely followed some people on the running site, the running log site I use, but it wasn't like Strava now where everyone and their mom's posting their workouts and, you know, who they're running with and that sort of thing. That is just a totally different level than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's interesting though how like Lexdorn has been like around the sport and so prominent for so long. Like I was on Lexdorn earlier today because I'm planning my like summer cross country training. So I was looking a bit at the message boards and like some articles, and I was looking, and then I checked the date. It was like 11 years ago. So that's crazy, but super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that'll happen to me too sometimes too. I'll like try to figure something out and I'll search in our message boards and it'll be like some article from 18 years ago talking about that sort of stuff. And it's just, there's some good stuff on there from back then. I don't know. I feel like we need to accumulate it all and post it somewhere. Like, hey, here are the best threads in Let's Run history. I think we might have tried to do that at some point. I don't know where that is right now, but it would be helpful. Just there's been a lot of knowledge shared on the Let's Run message boards through the years, and it would be cool to, you know, get that all in one easily accessible place.
Yeah, I remember like last year I was curious to learn more about New Jersey running and like the history of high school running specifically, and I did like a simple Google search about it, and one of the first sites that popped up was Let's Run. So I went on Let's Run, and there were a bunch of articles and posts about this topic. And like also like a few years ago, I went to running camp, and one of the schools there is CBA, and like obviously CBA is such a historic program. They've had like so many successful runners out of that school and program, and like a lot of CBA alums are like doing big things in the professional world. So even all of that stuff, that's all on Let's Run, or documented on Let's Run. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a team. I had a college teammate, Tim Gorman, who was part of their NXN title team in 2011, and now he's running, you know, sort of semi-professional. I don't know if he's full professional, semi-professional with the Mammoth Track Club. He made the USA final a couple years ago in the 1500, and he's a CBA alum, and he didn't let us forget it.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about Tim Gorman as one of the runners who are CBA runner alums when I was talking about that, because. Yeah, I'm following his like journey. Like he's trying to, I think he PR'd like a few weeks ago or recently. So I was looking through that because I went to a camp with a few like CBA alums. So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, he's a character. He'd be a great guest for your podcast. Actually, he's really a fascinating, funny guy, and very obviously a talented runner as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, so thank you so much for taking the time to do this, like, this call. Like, I learned so much about, like, the whole media side of running, as well as your own journey was super interesting. Yeah, so good luck with, like, covering the sport now in the future, and I hope you have, like, a great time at the trials and covering the sport in the future. Thanks again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, can't wait to the trials next week. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.